Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Sherry?
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually a lot better than my voice is going to sound.
Uh-huh.
I'm about 3 days back from losing my voice.
I see.
So I'm having that in-between voice sound.
I see.
That adolescent boy sound, actually.
Sort of the involuntary silence and coming out of that.
That's right. Exactly.
There's the silence of the monastery, and then there's the involuntary silence.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, by choice and by no choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited to be on the air.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I always look forward to it on Tuesdays.
Yeah, me too.
Energy starts to ramp up. And
uh-huh.
Talking about practice and talking with other people who are practicing.
Uh-huh.
It's so supportive.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Yes.
Yes. Just, conditioning is in such resistance. You know, we're always too busy, or it's too hard, or I don't feel like it, or whatever is going on that keeps us from coming to this place of being with other people, supportive people, doing practice. But once we get here,
yeah,
we realize what a great thing it is.
Yes. And I'm always encouraged by the emails that we receive from people who listen to the show and listen to the archives and find it so supportive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we hear that a lot, don't we, about the archives, people who are kind of out there somewhere where they really, it's not a matter of resistance. They actually don't have access to a group of people who are practicing together.
Yeah.
And so being able to listen to the archives, it can feel like, okay, well, I'm gonna do a little meditation, and then I'm gonna go to evening group, such as the one we have at the monastery or the Zen Center, and plug in one of those archives, and there you are. You're participating in a conversation about practice.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to them over lunchtime, and it's been really great.
Oh, good.
Sort of starting back at the beginning a couple of years ago.
Oh, my goodness, back at Stanford.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Sherry, we have a caller.
Wonderful.
I'd like to welcome Catherine from St. Louis. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Catherine. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Excellent.
I hope you get your voice back soon.
Yes.
At full strength.
Yeah, it's actually kind of fun. I kind of enjoy it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, good.
Yeah. I get used to, I listen to myself a lot, you know, because I talk a lot.
Uh-huh.
And so it's kind of entertaining to hear a voice that I'm not used to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what's going on in St. Louis?
Well, I'm taking on a more activist role in my labor union.
Uh-huh.
And working for change. And I'm finding it very difficult to do that with conscious, compassionate awareness.
Uh-huh. And what is the difficulty?
Well, I find I'm easily pulled into being really angry with the company and hating the people who run it.
Kind of an us against them.
Yes.
Mentality.
Yes. And while I know about projection, it seems to fly out the window when I'm identified with someone who's angry and the us against them. And the other side of that seems to be a feeling of defeated, being defeated. So I'm either angry and juiced up and ready to fight and hating the people who run the company, or I'm feeling weak. I'm feeling like our union isn't strong enough. and I don't know what to do, so I'm feeling helpless.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like the two opposites.
Uh-huh.
Kind of,
yeah, powerful and powerless.
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. Because the anger is a powerful feeling, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, when we get worked up enough, it's like, well, we'll just burn down the building and that'll fix them.
Right.
And then moving into that place of, you know, what kind of power do we have? They have everything.
Right.
We have nothing, and why should they give us anything, really?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what do you really want?
Well, I want to be able to go ahead and work for change. I'm not sure what that work would look like. At the same time, not hating.
Uh-huh.
Just, okay, here's maybe seeing a problem and, okay, we want to improve the working conditions here, whatever that might be, whatever those conditions might be,
mm-hmm.
and yet approach that and not be a pushover. So not hating and yet not being feeling powerless and
right.
doormat. So
let me ask you this: when these changes are approached, is it the case that you people who are on the we want change side of it? Do you approach it from the perspective of, okay, here's what we can do? Now, how could you meet us halfway?
Well, I'm not. No, I don't think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Actually,
mm-hmm.
I think it's. Now we've talked about that.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure that that's happened.
Uh huh. You know,
go ahead.
Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi is just such a huge hero of mine, and while I'm not exactly. You know, right on top of world events all the time, because I kind of follow Thoreau's thing of when you understand the principle, you don't need example after example.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of what goes on in the world seems to me to be the same exact scenario played out with simply different players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the content isn't even that different. And it sounds an awful lot like what you're describing. Here's a group of people who feel like the underdogs, who feel powerless, and they're the people who have the power to make a difference, who don't want to give up the power to make a difference for this other group of people. And, you know, I mean, we could plug in an awful lot of folks on,
mm-hmm.
on those the two sides of that equation.
Mm-hmm.
And I always marvel that we don't learn something from Mahatma Gandhi, who is actually, as far as I can tell, more successful than anyone else in affecting change. So he was able to achieve freedom for India, I'm sure, with fewer lives lost than have been lost in just about any other well, and then I just thought of the Czech Republic as an example of less fatalities. But at any rate, if we look at struggles for independence or struggles for the kinds of change that you're talking about, we don't have a lot of examples
mm-hmm.
of people using a non-violent, non-hating approach to getting what they want. And he did it so beautifully and so effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he, I think, always had going was, how can we work together to achieve this? And in the way that you're describing, not in a, we're going to overpower you, or we're just pushovers. We're not going to go away. We're not going to stop asking.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to work out some sort of mutually agreeable arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to quit sitting here. We're not going to get out of your face and let things work as as usual until we reach this mutually satisfactory place.
Okay. What's coming up for me is two things. First of all, I'm not the person here. I'm not Gandhi. And I know that you
could be.
Saying I need to be Mahatma Gandhi.
But you could be. You know the Mother Teresa quote, you know, and I'll not do this justice as I usually don't with quotes, but somebody asked her about being a holy person, and she said, "Yes, I'm called to be a holy person, and so are you." So we look at people and we think, "Well, but they're extraordinary." But I'm sure if we asked them, they would say, "Well, no, actually, I'm a very ordinary person who was just called to do this thing."
Mm-hmm.
Which you seem called to do,
mm-hmm.
since you are in that position.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it did occur to me that I want to do it, and I want to do it with conscious compassion and awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not easy. Now, it might be a good time to drag out and dust off your biography or autobiography of Mahatma Gandhi and just get a look at how difficult it was for him to do those extraordinary things that he did. So,
okay.
Yeah, so we start out, we do the best we can, and we say, I didn't meet my standard.
Mm-hmm, right.
I need to work harder at this next time.
Right.
I want to bring more patience. I want to bring more consciousness. And to me, it doesn't matter whether we're a union representative trying to bring about that sort of change, or we work for a government and we're trying to bring about that sort of change, or we're just a regular person in our own lives trying to bring about a change in our own life.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same process. I look at it. I come to center. I'm as centered as I can possibly be. I go forward. I see where I lost it.
Ah, okay.
I come back. I start again. I see where I lost it. Come back. Start again. And each time we do that, generally speaking, I mean, it's one of those. It can be one step forward, two steps back. Two steps forward, one step back. Any combination of forward and backward. If we're keeping score, then it can be depressing after a while.
Right.
But if what we realize is, no, I'm just attempting to bring as much conscious, compassionate awareness to this situation as I can, and that includes me, okay, then I just start again.
Okay. Okay, yeah. I'm seeing I have a lot of standards and a lot of...
Yeah, a lot of...
But what it's supposed to be like.
Yeah, a lot of ego figuring out how you can fail. And ego is always busy over there figuring out how we can fail, all the time telling us that we should be this way or that way, or and that we should be that way because that's the right person way to be.
Mm-hmm.
But if we really get it, that voice is just actually setting up and rooting for our failure, wanting us to quit so that we can get a beating for having failed, then, you know, that's just, in a way, so there's the company on one side, and there's egocentric karmic conditioning on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and there's you attempting to stay at center, right there in the middle. And either side is really the same process of sort of losing it with involvement, with ego projected onto the company, or ego just ego as egocentric karmic conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Is what's coming up is something about that I think you've said before in different words, that what if you do what is the something around doing what is before us to do, and what the answer will be there, or the next
yes.
step will appear.
Absolutely.
Okay. I think that I've been afraid that that's not going to happen.
Oh, well, yes. And again, the voices of karmic conditioning are going to be assuring you that that's not going to happen. So each step of the way, we get to this place and we stop and say, okay, what now? And we wait for the intuitive knowing that guides our life. Okay, what now? And as we learn to sit still and be at center and be open to the guidance, there it is. Okay, this.
Mm-hmm.
All right, do that. Stop right there. What's the next step? What is the next thing for me to do? And if we realize, you know, we're not going to change the world, the best that we can hope for is to affect this change in ourselves and possibly be a kind, caring, compassionate presence for those around us. That's the best that's going to happen. So if we approach this that I need to change this company, I need to make this different, then it's probably going to be an unhappy and ultimately unsuccessful pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
But if we realize what I'm attempting to do is bring conscious, compassionate awareness to this situation, that's it. That's the sum total of it. Again, you read our friend Mahatma Gandhi, you'll realize that that's all he was attempting to do.
Hmm. So if I'm identified with I've got to change the company, then that's ego.
Oh, sure. And you know what we get into is your ego is littler than their ego.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot more of them banded together with one ego.
Uh-huh.
So it's never going to work. The only hope for us is to drop all of that and come back to center and be the difference that we want to see that company be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So if I'm completely off center and filled with hatred and anger and resentment, and I'm waiting in that hateful, angry stance for you to become the person that I want you to be, I'm going to wait a long time.
Yeah.
But if I can be that difference, then there's a hope that you will see that and you will be moved by that and change happens.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Sherry.
Thank you. Let us know.
Okay, I will. Thank you. Bye,
bye,
Michael. Bye, Sherry.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Catherine. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. The phone lines are open here, and the number is toll-free in North America, 888-514-2100. Give us a call. And, Sherry, before the calls come, I'm going to start on this stack of email questions here.
All right.
Hi, Sherry and Michael. Since moving to Santa Cruz, I've been listening to your podcast. Isn't that technology great?
We think so, don't we?
Yeah. I'm going to have to catch up with this technology. Your podcast can also be found in the Apple iTunes store, and subscription there is also free.
Wow.
Listening to this past Tuesday's podcast, and this is about a month or so ago, I was very intrigued with your idea that, quote, everybody is Sangha. Since moving to Santa Cruz, I've been wanting to join a local Sangha group. There are two Zen centers I know of here, and from browsing their websites, I was surprised to learn that socializing was built into their community. In one of the centers, quote, tea and socializing, unquote, occurs after their weekly Wednesday evening meditation, according to their website. What arose for me immediately was the voice that said, quote, but I want to separate Sangha from socializing. I like the silence. I don't want to engage in talking immediately, end quote. And ever since then, I've noticed a lot of hesitation in even trying out the group. 1 week passes, and another week passes, and each week I have a new excuse. Then just this week I realized, quote, but I haven't even tried it, end quote. And already voices are making up stories about how I probably wouldn't like the way their Sangha is run with socializing. So next week, I'll go to Sangha, or at least I'll see if I go to Sangha. But isn't it interesting how some Sanghas actually socialize? I wonder if you could illuminate on why your advice is not to mix socializing and Sangha. Or have I misunderstood you in the past? In loving kindness, from a listener in Santa Cruz.
Well, you know, we could either say it is interesting or it isn't interesting. You know, there are a ton of people who do a lot of things. And and there isn't a misunderstanding. I absolutely encourage people not to socialize. Years ago, there was a scandal in a Zen center, and somebody was sitting with us and was going to move to that area and became really frightened, you know, about, I would really like to go there to Zen Center, I'd like a place to meditate with other people, but I'm really afraid because this is a scary place. And I thought I had some rather sage encouragement, which was just go meditate with them. You know, you don't have to drink with them, you don't have to sleep with them, you don't have to do anything other than just meditate with them. So yes, if this person would like a place to meditate and not be social, well, then you meditate and you get up and leave.
Yeah.
There's no requirement to socialize. What I've found over time, kind of repeating itself, is that when people start socializing, unconsciousness follows right hard on its heels.
Uh-huh.
And oftentimes it leads us into situations that can be avoided. And so for me, it just makes sense to avoid unnecessary suffering when we can. Now, many people will say, but it's great to practice conscious awareness with Sangha. And yes, it is. But you don't have to socialize to practice conscious awareness with Sangha.
Yes.
And we can practice conscious compassionate awareness anywhere. Again, we don't have to meditate together and then get up and go drink tea and start chit-chatting in order to practice conscious compassionate awareness. So, you know, everybody gets to try it out the way they want to try it out. People over the years have come to the Zen Center and they'll say, well, you know, I need to meditate this way. Is that okay? You know, I always meditate lying down. Is that okay? And my answer is, it's okay. It's great. It's wonderful. But you can't do it here, because here we practice sitting up, primarily cross-legged meditation.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not used to facing the wall. Is it okay if I sit facing the room? It's absolutely okay if you sit facing the room. You just can't do it here. So, you know, we go around, we see what works, we see what we like, what we don't like, and of course, very often I encourage people, you find what you like and keep looking. You find what you don't like, that's probably a really good place for you to practice. However, the encouraging part is, even if you like a place to begin with, then before long, egocentric karmic conditioning will find lots and lots and lots of stuff wrong with it and lots of reasons to leave.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And in your experience, over the years, mixing, socializing, and Sangha leads to unfortunate situations and unconsciousness.
Yeah, it really does. Yep.
Yes.
And I hear it from places. You know, oh, I used to participate in this group, but then, you know, it just fell into these factions and backbiting, and this group wanted to take over this, and who needs it? You know, you can go to work and find that, or you know, go visit your family and find that. No, we don't need it in meditation practice.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the person goes and they socialize, and then that becomes their experience. You know, somebody starts hitting on them, or you know, somebody's unpleasant to them, or they find that they're talking about things that they just don't want to talk about. Well, then there you had that experience. They're actually lovely people, so just meditate with them.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful. And in my experience, I can see the transition in myself from wanting to socialize to being very grateful that it's not a place to socialize.
Yeah. And that's the progression that most people make. In the same way, as you well know, we do a lot of workshops and retreats on particular subjects and that sort of thing. And in the beginning, a lot of people just want to go to the workshops. They don't want to have to meditate. And before long, they want to meditate, and they don't want to have to go to the workshop. So people come, they start practice, and they really want to know who these people are, you know, this is perfect. These are like-minded, like-hearted people. I want to just surround myself with them. And then time goes by, we just lose interest in it. You know, we really value, I would say, unconditionally love the people that we practice with.
Yeah.
But we have no interest in kind of chit-chatting or, you know, finding out where they went to school.
Yeah.
You know, their views on child rearing. You just, after a while, you just don't care.
Yeah. It's like there's something bigger that's more important.
Yeah.
That's my experience of it.
Yeah, we all practice together. That's what we have in common.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for that, Sherry.
Oh, thank you.
You're listening
Thanks to the writer for asking.
Yes. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be back with you in a couple of minutes. Sherry?
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good.
World Talk Radio.
Coming up next on Open Air, in our second segment of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be responding to your email questions and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back.
How are you living your dash? It's that little line between your date of birth and date of death that represents your life. Are you living your life by design or by default? Are you as effective as you'd like to be? Dash coaches uncover what you don't see so you can achieve that effectiveness. They empower people and organizations to optimize their dash. Get your free dash coaching session today. Call 516-677-9111 or visit dashlive.com.
How do you like your coffee? Not all coffee is the same. Kona coffee beans from Hawaii are some of the best anywhere. But not all Kona coffee is the same. Aloha Island Coffee, handcrafted like fine wine, is a family-owned private Kona plantation. They've created the finest boutique coffee you'll ever drink. Aloha Island Coffee, rare, very special, naturally low in acid and pesticide-free. Click on the banner on the Chef Larry Show page, AlohaIslandCoffee.com.
It's the magazine you've been waiting for. Real Magazine is for women like you. Women who are busy with real figures, real budgets, and real kids.
Like us. In every issue, you'll find recipes you have time to cook yourself for the whole family will love. And your favorite cookbook author, Leanne Ely.
Yes, we love Leanne.
You'll also see women who look like you with real fashion challenges, like us, and real jobs.
The articles are easy to finish. No paging to page 125 to finish it while you're trying to carpool. And you'll feel inspired and empowered after every issue.
Go to their website to subscribe now and get a great bundle of free goodies from DHC, the premier skincare company.
Yes, go to www.realmagazine.net or go to our homepage and click on the link. You're going to love this magazine.
We love it, and we know you will.
World Talk Radio, bringing the world to you.
Interested in advertising on any of our shows? Please click the advertise link on the homepage or send an email to ads@worldtalkradio.com. Or you can click on the sponsor this show link on any of the show pages.
Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, I wanted to mention a little bit about your calendar coming up.
Uh-huh.
Next month, April, you're going to be doing a swing through the East Coast.
Yes.
So you'll be in New York at the Integral Yoga Institute on April 17th. And then a couple of days later, April 19th, you'll be in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Yes.
For an evening of conversation on unconditional self-acceptance.
Mm-hmm. And people are invited to both of those.
Yes. And then a couple of days later in Philadelphia.
Yes. I don't think that that's me, actually.
Oh. You know, I should really check these things.
Yeah, I think that's one of the monks who will be doing a weekend workshop there.
Great. Great.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Uh-huh. Unless they've added something to my schedule. It happens.
And all of the schedule is on the Living Compassion website.
Our beautiful new website.
Beautiful new. It's really beautiful.
Yeah, I hope people experience it that way. We are. We're experiencing it that way.
Yes.
Yeah, I was looking for something the other day, in fact, and I just scooted right around it and found everything I was looking for, and I was so happy.
I was just going to say, it's really easy to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really enjoying it. Let me give out the phone number again. The phone lines are open here. We'd love to talk with you today. The number is toll-free in North America. That's 888-514-2100. If you're further away outside of North America, you can reach us at 001-858-268-3068. Sherry, I have another email question here.
Okay.
I did it. I treated myself to an iPod due to the podcasting feature now available on World Talk Radio.
I love it.
I confess, I've recently bought one also, Sherry.
Okay. We'll all buy stock in the company.
Yes. Despite the voices saying there are only two shows available, you should wait, or you are in college and you shouldn't go blowing your money, or you are downright selfish for buying that. How incredible. I only have the two most recent shows on my iPod repeating themselves, and surprise keeps appearing even though I have been listening for several hours as I work on my drawings for class. The surprise is that the resistance, surprise at what I forget.
Yeah.
It took some time and a lot of unnecessary loss, but the message you patiently explained to me is slowly being allowed into the room with the lights on. My conditioning got a sharp stab from someone close. Quote, who is Valerie if she isn't angry? End quote. And the result was avoidance of him for 6 months, accompanied by creative, persistent, and angry stories of how wrong he was. The same content, under the illusion of being about something different, was, quote, this isn't the way this class should be. This class has to be different, end quote. Partially because the teacher was a sensitive, deep, feeling person. He is capable of reflecting back how much I wasn't feeling to me, which I didn't want to see.
Mm.
It is cringeworthy, to say the least, until I remember that cringing isn't a magical tool to fix the past. Funny how feeling good prompts me to write in as opposed to calling in. Hopefully I will call in and read my own email before you read it. I was incredibly excited to hear of the process mapping over the phone with other people and hearing that you are going to be touring the country. Thankful and feeling good until I am not, from a listener.
Boy, that last little line just captures it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. That whole thing is so powerful.
Yes.
I and you, of course, we just talk endlessly about egocentric karmic conditioning and the voices and resistance that comes up to us, being at center, being happy, having the lives we want. I understand it can sound kind of nuts, or paranoid, or too extreme, or whatever it is, which, of course, is the assessment that's coming from conditioned mind.
Yes.
Right? But when we start into it, the place that the writer is talking about, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to start filling my conscious awareness with a different kind of information, and the resistance that rises up against that is just unbelievable.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And there it is. you know, I feel better. Here I am. I'm present. I'm centered. I'm listening to information other than what's wrong with me and what there's not enough of. I'm here. I'm conscious. I'm present. Life is working. I feel good. I feel grateful. You know, I can see possibilities. And then, poof, I'm out there. I'm completely identified with egocentric karmic conditioning. I'm miserable. It's beating me up. I hate life. Poof, I'm back at center.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's great.
Yeah, it's good. And it's really great for me to, you know, hear all the voices written out.
Yeah.
And just put it out there.
Yeah.
This is what I'm being told.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what I'm being told. Now, that's such a powerful disidentifying tool. You know, to anybody, I mean, you could practically walk up to a stranger at a bus stop and say, can I tell you what the voice is in my head saying? And, you know, first of all, if the person didn't, run screaming away from you, after a few voices, a few sentences of what you're hearing, they would probably say, mine too.
Mine too.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Great. And more support for the iPod.
Yes.
And the podcast.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
This, I'm sure we've probably talked about it on the radio, but that's how this whole There's Nothing Wrong With You work started. I had this, I knew that to replace the voices of egocentric karmic conditioning, that's always in there, with different information. Not positive thinking, not that, but literally to replace it with a different reality.
Yes.
Would be the thing that would immediately liberate a person, because we conditioned humans just live in such a world of unpleasantness and negativity with those conditioned voices, that not to listen to them, not to hear them, would be, it would be just such a relief.
Yeah.
But of course, those voices are there constantly pushing out everything. You know, they're going to fill every silence. And so to replace those voices with the kind of information that it's possible for us to hear about how life works and who we really are and what's possible for us, I knew that would be the transformative combination. And I actually had this little fantasy of just making tapes for people of a continuous loop of, you know, you're fine. You're fine exactly the way you are. You're doing a great job. You know, everybody fails to meet the standards once in a while. Come on, let's look at all of the wonderful things that you're doing and how hard you're trying and what a great person you are. You know, this sort of thing. And then I thought, oh my goodness, can you imagine the reputation a person would achieve putting tapes out like that? Because this was long before CDs, and having people listen. You know, if this wouldn't define cult, I don't know what would. But still, to encourage people to do that sort of thing with their own voice, to listen to the kinds of information that comes through a radio show like this and many, many other places where people are focused on possibility instead of suffering it.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. And we actually, truly, never need to participate in anything else.
Yes. Yes.
The voices would have us believe that we need to do that. You know, we need to have a pretty non-stop input of everything that's wrong. Everything that's wrong with me, with you, everything that's wrong in the world,
yes.
Everything tragic and horrible. And
yes.
But we don't need to live in that.
Yes.
It doesn't help anything.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for that, Sherry.
Mm.
And we have another caller now.
Excellent.
I'd like to welcome Lisa from Philadelphia. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I was calling because I've been looking at, and it's kind of very fresh for me and new, I've been looking at how I create or manufacture my own dissatisfaction.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It's crazy that I didn't see it, and it's crazy that it's happening, and mm-hmm. It's just like, wow. So.
And it's crazy that we can go so long and not see it.
Yeah, uh-huh. And it's been really interesting because I know, like, when I've been in places and I've heard other people talk about fantasies and they get very disturbed by the fact that they have fantasies, and I was like, oh, well, I don't really do that. No. That's not my issue.
Yeah. Let's not look at that too long.
It's that they don't disturb me because I don't really get too hung up. I get pulled away and then I come back, and, you know, I never really thought much of it until recently. There's a place where our sitting group meets, and out front they usually have little pithy quotes. And one of the quotes they had was, to dream of the person you want to be is to waste the person that you are.
Mm.
And for me, what it spoke to for me was, to dream of the moment that you want to have is to waste the moment that you're having right now.
Yeah. Boy, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so I noticed in my life, especially, you know, when I became aware of that, I say, I got to get through this a lot. Or if I could just get through blah, 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 then I can get to the thing that I really want to do, you know, where I can get the reward, you know, if I can just, you know, that kind of thing.
And you know, that's really considered admirable in a conditioned world.
Right.
You know, that's really the positive way to look at life. That's kind of having life in perspective.
Right. Yeah. That's discipline. That's, you know, people think of it as you know delaying gratification or something. But
uh-huh.
What's happening then is that I'm living half of a life because I'm on some other kind of autopilot during the parts that I have to, you know, get through,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the real part where I'm enjoying my life.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And the really spooky, creepy part of that is that somebody that we don't actually know is deciding which parts we should go on autopilot for.
Right.
Oh, you're not going to like this. I mean, nobody says that. You know,
right.
You don't hear that voice say, oh, you're not going to like this. Just go unconscious. I'll get you through this.
Right.
It's much more subtle than that, but that's really what's happening.
Yeah.
So as we begin to wake up to it, it's like, what am I missing here? What's going on? Well, I'm being encouraged to believe that I don't want to actually be here because it'll be unpleasant.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. And so, you know, and then that's basically it. So I'm dissatisfied. I'm disappointed. You know, well, today isn't going to be any good, but tomorrow will be good, so I've just got to get to tomorrow, you know, that kind of thing. Like, at the monastery, it becomes very slow when I've been there, like, okay, I just can't wait for the next meal, you know?
You know? If I can just get through these next 4 hours, they'll feed me again.
I've only got to sit at this wall and, you know, suffer you know, for so much longer, you know.
Uh-huh. And it becomes silly, doesn't it, once we catch on to it. It's like, wait a minute, this is life.
Right.
How bad could this be?
Right. Which is, you know, the other quote that stuck out at me recently was, you know, be happy for this moment because this moment is your life, you know. And it's like, yeah, my life is all these little moments, and if I'm shutting down during all these moments because I don't want to be having that experience, where is my life?
Yeah,
you know what
I
mean?
And, of course, the way we talk about it, that system that's telling you, oh, go to sleep, go unconscious, you're not going to like this, is having your life.
Right. That's
what's there being fed in that moment that you're not there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a double whammy. I mean, you miss this moment of life, and that moment of life is given to a system that is really there to rob you of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you didn't get that $5 in the bank, and in fact, another $5 was taken out and given to somebody else.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting because there's also this feeling of when I do that, it's like, okay, well, I'm beating the system. You know, I'm not going to be present for this, and that's how, you know, I'll be able to get my enjoyment, you know, because I'm just not going to be present for this.
Yeah.
And it's just
of course, after we practice for a while, which is what has happened to you, I'm still quite confident, is that we begin to realize, wait a minute, any moment that I'm present for is a good moment.
Right.
Any moment that I miss is, is it a bad moment? I don't know. It's a moment of dissatisfaction. So, yeah, I guess we could say it is.
Right. And, like, I'm in school right now, and I just recently had, like, a huge exam. And, I already decided that was going to be horrible studying for it, you know. And when I actually sat down to do it with the mind of being present, like, I loved it. Like, it was really fun.
Yeah. It's not like somebody put a gun to your head and said, you'll go to school or else.
Right.
It's like I've made a choice to go to school, and then conditioning is going to tell me that doing the work of going to school is horrible.
Right.
Yeah, so I just have to miss going to school because then I'll get that degree, and then my life. Of course, then I'll have to go to work, and conditioning will tell me that the job that I'm going to is horrible. And so then, yeah.
Right.
And you'll retire, and you'll have a lot of money, and then you can enjoy your life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But then I retire, and I feel unfulfilled.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's a setup, you know.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, it's a form of prejudice. It really is. It's making a decision about something before I've even experienced it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, so I don't know. I'm just really grateful for the practice, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to...
To see it. And a big thanks to those people who are putting these little pithy sayings.
I know.
I
know, they're good.
Yeah, they're very good.
Between those and the peace quotes, I'm going to have to wake up no matter what, you know.
Yeah. It's a conspiracy.
Right. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Lisa.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Lisa. You are listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have about 7 minutes left, and we have two callers. I'm not sure if we'll get to both of them. We'll see where.
But we'll do our best.
Okay. I'd like to welcome Rebecca from Austin, Texas. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi. How are you,
Sherry? Rebecca.
It's good to hear you. Hear your voice again.
Such as it is, huh?
Yeah. Well, since we're kind of talking about sayings, that's actually what triggered my call too. Was a saying that I've been pondering or sitting with for since the online class, and it was this that. It was a quote, I think, from St. Francis of Assisi that said, don't change the world, change worlds.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that one? Was that from the online class, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of continued my thing that I've been working with, for the past few years in this practice with politics and public life, because that's so much of my work life.
Uh-huh.
And trying to... Well, not really trying, but just looking at it through the lens of awareness practice and how we do that. And it seems to fit this whole kind of sense that there are things to change in the world, which, you know, is really contradicting what Francis was pointing to, I think, or at least saying that the way to change is to change our perspective in our world.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
Yes, which we could suspect, huh?
Yeah.
So it's something as simple as there's something wrong with the way the world is, and we need to do something about it. You know, starting back with Catherine, you know, there's something wrong with this company, and we need to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And moving to the place of, wow, this world is our best opportunity to choose compassion no matter what.
Yeah.
It's our best opportunity to keep expanding that circle of compassion until there is absolutely no one and nothing left outside it.
Yeah.
And if that isn't changing worlds, I don't know what would be.
Well, in that quote fits so beautifully in with what you wrote in a little essay on how to change the world in the Trying to Be Human book,
uh-huh.
where it says just find something you love to do, and then, you know, and don't blame anyone and don't ask anyone to help, just do it.
Uh-huh.
And I've kind of begun to adopt that that posture, whatever, for politics, that for being engaged in the public sphere, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try it on and see how it feels and how it fits. But it seems like that this is just such a fun thing to do, to kind of get in and try to solve some really complex issues and see, get as many people as possible to participate in the whole dialogue and conversation and see what emerges and see who is for and against and who's going to stand in the way and who's going to help and who's going to get, you know, it's just kind of like a big, you know, game in a way.
Yes, exactly. And you know, when you just said that, I thought, what we want to do, you know, we get on one side, we get polarized, and then we look over across the net, and those people over there are evil. And, you know, when we all start playing the game at that level, it's like, now, what do you people want? What do you evil people, what do you want?
Uh-huh.
And, of course, what they want is to be happy, and they want to have a good life, and they want to feel like they're making a difference, and they want to feel cared about and appreciated and valued and, gosh, that's what we want.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're just not going to find the person who's going to stand up and say, you know, well, I don't really care about anything, and I just want to do as many rotten things as I can do during my lifetime, and then when it's over, that's it.
Yeah.
So that's just not where just about anybody is coming from. Even though when we're polarized in that way, their behaviors can look like that.
Oh, yeah.
One side, you know, on both sides, whichever side of the net a person is on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is so absolutely convincing that they're evil when that's the filter, that's the projection that is coming out.
Yeah. So if we just look at what we happen to know is motivating us and what's actually motivating just about everybody we know, we can pretty quickly get to, okay, we all want the same thing. Now the only question is, how are we going to get it?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to get there?
What's the way? Yeah, and telling someone that you're projecting on those people that they're evil and they're not really evil is not really helpful.
No, not at all. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Uh-huh. it's that owning your projections thing, you know?
Yeah.
But that is, you know, that's really helpful. I've got to teach this thing on the spirituality of public life in a few weeks, so I'm just really trying to think about it. It's helpful to how to articulate it and how to think about it.
Well, and that projection tool is a big one, isn't it?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It sure is.
Yeah, I'm convinced more than anything else, that awareness of that tool would change the world. If nothing else, it would make us so much more careful about what we say.
Mm-hmm.
We might say a lot in private, but we'd certainly say far less in public.
Yeah, when we realize how much we're revealing about ourselves,
exactly.
In a way.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's good. That's helpful to think about.
Yeah. Well, I'll be eager to hear how your class goes.
Oh, okay. I'll check back in, let you know.
All right. Good, dude.
Maybe you'll have time for that other caller.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good thinking.
Well, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, I got good news that we can go to the top of the hour, which means we have about another 4 or 5 minutes.
Lovely.
And I'd like to welcome John from Los Angeles.
Hi, guys.
You're on Open Air.
Hey, John.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, and you?
I'm excellent, thank you.
Good, what's going on?
The last time we spoke, we talked, you encouraged me to sort of look out as, you know, everything is Sangha.
Uh-huh.
Last time we spoke, and I've been sort of kind of engaging that way. I'm getting a lot of people crying with me lately.
Mm.
A lot of people, well, I guess I'm... You know, I'm spending time talking to people, and we just sort of sit, and then they sort of burst into tears.
Uh-huh. In a good sort of way?
Yeah, I think so. It's sort of very, usually pretty cathartic for them and kind of intriguing for me. I'm on the road a lot, and I'm meeting a lot of different people from a lot of different cultures and sort of talking, and they're all kind of sort of saying the same sorts of things. What's being said, what I'm hearing today, about people being dissatisfied and... even my own place within that sort of polarity, you know, of, you know, what you're looking for on the other side of the net.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when things can be going really well, there can be a lot of magic happening, and there's still that sort of seed of, well, that doesn't quite feel right.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm being really quiet. Something you once said, I think, when we were in a facilitator's workshop, you said if you ever thought that you had to say something or needed to say something to someone, you tended not to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing that a lot. And then people start crying.
Uh-huh.
It's been kind of interesting. And my experience of things has been that I'm feeling really, in a certain way, kind of that sort of sadness. Maybe there's part of me that's resonating with that, because there's a lot of good things that are happening, they're magical, and then there's also part of me that feels kind of, again, sort of isolated within the practice, which is a theme that I'm still...
Okay, well, what you're bringing up to me is a really important thing for us to consider.
Okay.
So just the way I lay out how life works, there's egocentric karmic conditioning, and then there's center. And when we're at center, what we're experiencing is life. And
yeah, a lot of that.
And it really is magical. When we're there for life, it's magical. Now, if egocentric karmic conditioning convinces us that in order for life to be the way we want it to be, there should be no egocentric karmic conditioning with its dissatisfaction and illusion of separation and suffering and nagging and something wrong and not enough, then we're going to believe that no matter how magical life is, there's something wrong because egocentric karmic conditioning is there. But if we, so imagine we're all sitting around in a room together, and over in one corner is this little egocentric karmic conditioning, just pouting and kind of spitting at people periodically and slapping out and being generally miserable and projecting stuff onto, you know, if we held an image that the only way we could be happy in that room together is if we got rid of that little critter over in the corner,
right,
then we'd be in a world of hurt.
Right.
But if we realized part of our happiness is realizing that that's there and we don't need to engage with it in a way that perpetuates suffering,
yeah,
then we're free.
Feel that. Yeah, I'm feeling that.
Yeah.
But doesn't it, I mean, this is maybe my projection is things are becoming very dreamlike. There's like the passage of time and sort of the process of things and engaging with people and sort of things becomes very tenuous. Not tenuous, but I don't know the word. It's just very thin because everything just sort of keeps happening and flowing and I keep sort of letting go and coming back to, well, that's okay.
Yeah.
And then it gets thinner and thinner, and then people keep bursting into tears and I go, oh, that's okay, you can burst into tears.
Yeah, and within that, karma, ego, conditioning is going to be over there going, yeah, but I'm not happy. Yeah, but I'm not happy. Yeah, but I'm still dissatisfied. Well,
I'm not sure if it's dissatisfied. I'm uncertain. I think the part of me that's so used to being in conditioning, that part of me that was spent so many years sort of being really engaged in that dialogue, is the one that's pointing at things going, but you're not really engaged, so you should be unhappy, but you're not, and you're not being affected, but you're not. Does that mean it's wrong? You know,
well, see, I would say that's still the voice of egocentric.
Right.
Karmic conditioning. And it's always going to be there. So if we know that and we're looking for that,
right,
we see it there and go, oh, yeah, okay, you're part of the scene too.
Right.
Yeah. Then it's not a problem. But people idealize being happy, a happiness that excludes egocentric karmic conditioning. And
you
then
include
they
everything.
Keep thinking they're unhappy when they're actually not.
Yeah, I'll include everything, or at least I'll try and practice it.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks for joining us, John. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. It's been great.
I loved it. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Something else for the iPod.
Yes. I'll talk to you next week.
See you next week.
Thank you,
John. Good night.
Good night.